Hi everyone! Before we dive into this week's episode, please check out our promo of the week.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
Your world can change in the blink of an eye.
He walked into the bedroom and you know that she had been murdered.
So he's running up and down, screaming, "Oh my God, someone call 911. There are two men killing a girl."
I know my son, and he would not go that long without saying anything to anyone.
Safety can be an illusion, and reality, a nightmare.
So how do you steal a person, a grown person?
Unspeakable crimes can penetrate any small town, big family, pretty face, or innocent child. And in the wake of a loved one's murder or disappearance, there is nothing more cruel or desperate as silence.
Why won't people talk about it? That's another thing. People don't want to talk about it around here.
For the families of the missing and murdered, they gambled with their sanity as they lose hope in closure and settle for justice. That's where the cold case playing cards come in. In each episode of the Dealing Justice podcast, your hosts Jennifer Dubasek and Lori Jennings will spotlight one card from the cold case playing card deck. Hear the victim's story from the friends and family who knew them best.
Her mom will never stop fighting until she finds out what happens to her daughter.
Learn about the crime and help close the case. Welcome to Season 2. We're not just playing cards, we're dealing justice.
Hi, I'm Laura.
And I'm Jo.
And this is Crime Divers.
Hello everybody, welcome to this wee bonus episode.
Hello everyone.
So, we know it's not Tuesday.
Definitely not Tuesday.
No, it's Friday today. But I did come across this case, and as I was sort of researching, I realised it was going to be a bit of a shorter one, so I just decided to do it as a bonus.
Just because.
Yeah, so it's just a wee bonus episode
for you. We like a wee bonus, don't we?
Yeah, now and again, eh?
Yeah, don't worry.
Why not?
What a treat for you.
Well, not really when you hear it.
That's very true, not treating. But anyway, where in the world are we?
We're in Australia.
Okay, okay, we're down under.
Yeah.
And what is the title?
It's called The Spear Gun Killer.
Oh, okay.
So should we dive in?
Let's dive in.
Okay, so John Sharp was born on the 28th of February 1967 in Mornington, Victoria. He later met Anna Kemp when they worked together at the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. She had been born in New Zealand in 1963, so she was like 4 years older than him, mm-hmm. But she now lived in Australia. They got married in 1994, and their daughter, Gracie Louise Sharp, was born in August 2002. So Gracie was born with a condition called hip dysplasia. I think that's how you pronounce it.
All right.
So it's an abnormality of the hip joint, where the socket portion does not fully cover the ball portion.
Right.
So resulting in an increased risk for joint dislocation.
Okay.
So Gracie needed a corrective harness for the first 3 months of her life. So that must have been awful, just for a wee tiny baby.
Oh, no.
It must have been uncomfortable for her, and she cried a lot, and she had, problems sleeping and stuff, understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So Anna was a great mum, and, Gracie was, everything to her, and she stayed at home to look after her rather than going back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So in November 2003... Anna found out that she was pregnant again, and she was really excited and was so happy. She'd always said that she wanted more than one child. She wanted Gracie to have a sibling, and
mm-hmm.
she'd always said that, when their mum and dad aren't around anymore, she didn't want Gracie to be alone. You know, she wanted her to have a sibling.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, I think that's nice.
That is nice.
So, unfortunately, John didn't feel the same.
Oh.
He wasn't happy about her being pregnant.
Well, if you're not happy, you shouldn't do the deed.
Well, yeah, I mean, it should have been a joint decision. So if he didn't want it, then...
I know.
Yeah. So, and he had been kind and gentle before, mm-hmm. but now he just seemed hostile towards his wife, and he would shout at her in front of Gracie, which he, like, he'd never did that before. So he just turned into a bit nasty.
He just obviously wasn't dealing with it very well.
No, he just didn't want another child. He wasn't happy about it. Just
right, okay.
So he started taking it out on his wife, on Anna. So in March 2004, John and Anna moved to a new house in Prince Street, Mornington. On Tuesday the 23rd of March, Anna, she's still pregnant, she called a health insurance company at about 2 p.m. to have the new baby added to the family's health cover. So Anna's friend Samantha, she had plans to get together with Anna on the Friday of that week. But on the Thursday, so the day before, Samantha got a phone call from John. And she was like, what the hell? Like, I've never spoken to him on the phone before. Like, why the hell is he calling me?
Totally out of character.
Yeah, totally. So he told her that Anna had left. That he'd left her. That she had left him.
Uh-huh.
And then he also phoned one of Anna's other friends. And she was the same. She was like, why are you phoning me? Strange.
We don't communicate.
You're just my friend's husband, you know. Yeah. Why are you phoning me?
Mm-hmm.
But he said that Anna had left with another man and had left Gracie behind. And immediately Anna's friends were like, nah. She wouldn't do that. There is just no way in this world that she would ever leave her child behind. Just wouldn't happen. So the day before that, the Wednesday, a guy called Chris Rays, he was a TV antenna technician.
Mm-hmm.
He had arrived at the Sharp's house to do an adjustment that Anna had booked him for.
Right.
And, like, John answered the door and sort of, like, when they were standing at the door, Chris saw someone else inside the house. And he said it looked like an older man, but Chris refused to let him inside. But it's actually, I don't know why I'm kind of pointing out, but I just found it weird that even at the end of this story, this man was never, like, sort of identified or...
Oh, so you don't know who it was?
No, but, we just never find out why he was there, what he was doing, and, like, Chris refused... John refused to let Chris in the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just seemed very weird that when they let him in the house, this older man was there. He was just acting, like, the guy had pointed out because it was just... weird.
Strange, yeah.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Just acting very odd.
So on the Friday, which was the 26th of March 2004, John took Gracie to preschool and he told staff, I don't know why they call it preschool, because she's only like 20 months. She's less than two and she's got a preschool. Would that not like be like a nursery, like rather than a preschool?
So I don't know what they call it there though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just weird that they would call it preschool. Like, to me, preschool's like when you're maybe four. Not two.
Well, no, you can go to nursery from when you're like two. You go private ourselves, not like school.
That's just me being picky.
Yeah, just being picky.
John took Gracie to preschool and he told the staff that she wouldn't be coming back.
Oh, that'd be like her last day.
Yeah.
Okay.
So later that day, he went shopping and he took Gracie with him to buy two spearheads for a spear gun that he had bought in January. So meanwhile, in Dunedin, in New Zealand, Anna's family were starting to get a bit worried because remember, that's where she's from.
That's right, yeah.
She hadn't been responding to phone calls and her mum, Lily, spoke to her priest and told him that she had spoken to Anna on the Monday when she tried to get in contact with her after that. She didn't pick up. And although Lily left numerous messages on the answering machine, Anna never called her back. So, of course, she's like, nah, there's something wrong. So, funnily enough, while the priest was visiting Lily, John called her, so her son-in-law called her. And he told her the same story as what he told her friends, that Anna had left him for another man and that she was going to come back on the Monday to pick Gracie up. So he hadn't said that before, but...
Right, okay.
And Lily...
To make it more believable.
Yeah, Lily was like, nah, because from what she had said, we're Catholic.
Uh-huh.
Like, there were some like devout Catholics and, you know, like, divorce... is not a, like, we just don't do that. We don't leave our husbands like for other men, you know. Like, she wouldn't do that,
right?
But John also told Lily that this other man was the father of the baby that Anna was carrying,
right?
And she just didn't. It happens, yeah. Like, people have affairs, people get pregnant by other people. But, you know, Lily was just like, nah, this isn't the way that she's been brought up. Like, she just wouldn't do that. My daughter, she wouldn't do that.
It just sounds totally out of character for her, basically.
So with Lily's agreement, the priest contacted Constable John Woodhouse of Dunedin Police. So this is in New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
And he actually didn't think there was anything in it to start off with. Initially, he thought that being a Catholic girl, perhaps she was ashamed of having left her husband for another man, and she was worried, like, what her mum's reaction would be to it.
Right.
But as the days passed, like, Anna's family became more and more concerned, and they were always looking at on at the, at the police. And the Constable Woodhouse tracked down Anna's local health centre and called them. And a nurse said that she remembered seeing Anna and that she seemed upset about her husband's reaction to her pregnancy.
Right.
So the police found this strange because Anna's friends and mum also told them that John wasn't happy about it. But if Anna had told John that the baby was another man's and that she was planning on running away with him, then why would she be telling people that she was upset about John's reaction to the pregnancy? Because surely she would be concerned about the father's reaction to it. Not because she was leaving her husband. So why would she be bothered about what how he was reacting to it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe she was just because he she had cheated on him and she was now pregnant with another man's baby. Maybe she was just worried about his reaction to all of it.
Yeah, but you're not getting what I'm saying.
Okay, then.
No, but, like, she, about the fact that she was pregnant. Like, so she's worried about the father of the child, like how he's going to react to it, like about having to bring this child into the world and everything. Not the fact that she's had an affair, that she's leaving him for another man. The fact that she was worried, she's like, she's saying to the nurse, she's worried about her husband's reaction to it. Like, she's not going to be telling the nurse about her extramarital affairs and the fact that it's somebody else's child, is she? So that's what I mean. Like, the fact that she was bothered, she was telling the nurse that she's bothered about his reaction to it. So that led the police to believe that John was the father of the unborn child. So on Sunday the 28th of March, John told Anna's family and friends that she had came by to pick Gracie up. So I don't know if she was just, if he was forgetting his lies because he had told her mum she was picking Gracie up on Monday, or maybe he just said that she'd came earlier than expected or whatever. I don't know if that matters.
Right.
So anyway, he said that she'd picked her up and then left in a taxi. So of course, like, the police were straight onto that, and they're like, the Constable Woodhouse, like, got the phone number for every single taxi company in the Mornington and called them all.
And none of them had...
Well, surprise, surprise, none of them had any record of Anna using their service. So Constable Woodhouse made several attempts to contact John Sharp by phone, but he couldn't get a hold of him. So he put together a case file and sent it to Australia. And it landed on the desk of Shane Brundle, a detective sergeant at Victoria Missing Persons Unit. So John Sharp was interviewed. A detailed statement was taken from him. And then after that, they started watching him closely. Because you know what they say, it's always the husband. So a couple of days later, John was seen walking into bushes next to a public toilet on the Esplanade in Mornington. So he picked up a blue plastic bag, took out what appeared to be a credit card, and then put the bag back in its hiding place, because obviously the police were watching him as well. And once he left, obviously the police went straight to the plastic bag and found that it contained Anna's mobile phone, her Visa card, and her driver's license. So now the police were like,
something's happened.
Yeah, Anna's met with foul play.
Yeah.
And that John was the prime suspect for her disappearance. So police checked Anna's Visa card records, and it had been used to order flowers online for Anna's mum, Lily. But Lily, she didn't believe for a moment that the flowers were from Anna. She was like, nah, something's happened to my daughter, you know.
Not adding up.
She's not going to just, like, not be in touch with me, then send me flowers. That's not going to happen.
No.
So Anna's phone had also been used quite a few times since she disappeared. Also, Lily and other members of her family had received emails, apparently from Anna, but they just didn't sound like they came from Anna. You know, obviously, you can, when you talk to somebody,
when you know someone, you know what they're, maybe the way that they type things or write things and say things. So if it's something's a bit off, I mean, you could probably tell.
Yeah. So according to John, once Anna had picked up Gracie on that day in March, he never heard from them again. So on the 26th of May, which was 2 months after Anna and Gracie's disappearance, John made a televised appeal for his wife and daughter's return. So, of course, he was on the telly, like, sobbing his eyes out and just wanting his wife and daughter to come back. So Detective Constable Mark Kennedy of the Missing Persons Unit had taken John's statement when he was first interviewed, but he watched the televised interview and he's like, this is a completely different guy.
This just sounds so random, because it's like, well, obviously he is now coming across like they've gone missing, but yet before he was saying, oh, well, she's left me, mm-hmm. and he's come to pick up her daughter, so that's not like they went missing. She's just left me, taking my daughter, but now he's on TV saying...
Yeah, but what he's saying is, yeah, they did leave, but I haven't heard from them since. So that's how they're missing. Okay. So he's not really changing his story, he's just kind of adding onto it that he hasn't seen them again. So he's... But we know where this is going.
Yeah, of course.
So DC Kennedy said he thought... He was just acting. Like, he was just pretending to be a concerned, emotional father and husband and pretending to be terribly worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when he had taken the statement, John was very much more matter-of-fact, less emotional and more consistent with his answers. And in that interview, he had actually, John had actually said, I don't really care where Anna is, I just want to know where Gracie is.
Okay.
So he's went from... an interview saying, I don't care where my wife is, to like 2 months later, sobbing his eyes out, saying, I want my wife back.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he wasn't the only one who thought that John was acting. He said, this guy said, if he had a dollar for everyone who said to him, this bloke is just pretending, he's acting, and he just doesn't come across as real or truthful. So, like, nobody was buying it.
No, nobody, doesn't sound like it.
So, missing persons unit officers spoke again to friends and relatives. And they were, like, grilling John repeatedly, like, trying to find, like, a possible motive. And they did actually get to a stage where police decided they did have sufficient evidence to arrest John on the 2nd of June 2004. At first, he stuck to the story that Anna had run off with another man.
Mm-hmm.
But the evidence against him was very strong. And after a while, it seemed like he really wanted to tell them what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So an officer... said to him, like, do you want to write it down? Because it was as if he did want to tell them, but, like, he actually had a fear of sort of actually coming out with the words and saying it.
He just couldn't find the words to say it.
Yeah. So after several hours, John spoke to members of his family, and then he confessed to the murders of his pregnant 41-year-old wife, Anna, and 20-month-old daughter, Gracie. And, of course, she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So by early 2004, John was already planning on killing Anna and decided on the weapon that he was going to use. So in January, remember I'd said earlier when he got the spearheads, he'd already bought the gun in January. So in January, he'd bought a spear gun and two spears. He paid in cash so that the transaction couldn't be traced.
Mm-hmm.
And on the evening, that's when he bought it. So on the evening of the 23rd of March, John and Anna went to bed between 9 and 10 p.m. Anna fell asleep quickly, but John lay, because this is his confession.
Uh-huh.
So John lay brooding about the problems in their marriage. He got up, went to the garage and returned to the bedroom with the spear gun. He approached the bed and he fired the spear gun. Why are you making noises?
Because that's horrible. I'm just thinking of it. That's not nice.
I was just like, what's that noise? It was just a weird... Do you know what it sounded like? It sounded like a phone vibrating. You know, if a phone's like on a surface and it vibrates, that's what the noise sounded like. That's why I was like, what the hell?
I knew what you were about to say and I was like,
Okay, sorry. Right, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So... he approached the bed and fired the spear gun at close range, striking Anna in the temple. But the shot didn't kill her, so he used the second spear and that did kill her. So he then covered Anna's body in towels and went downstairs to sleep on a sofa bed. What got me was, like, he couldn't sleep because he was brooding about his marriage, but then he could perfectly well go to sleep after he killed her. That's awful, isn't it?
That is awful.
So the following morning, he attempted to remove the spears from Anna's head, but they wouldn't budge. So he unscrewed the shafts and left the spearheads embedded in Anna's temple. He then dragged her body downstairs and buried her in a shallow grave that he had already dug in the back garden.
That's horrible.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a trigger warning because I'm going to tell you what happened to Gracie.
I know, I'm just like waiting.
So if anybody, I know nobody wants to hear about child murder, but if you really can't listen to it, then just skip ahead.
Yeah.
So on Saturday evening... and I just want to say before this, actually, when he went shopping and bought spearheads when he took Gracie with him,
mm-hmm.
he must have known that they were for her because he'd already killed Anna and the spearheads had been stuck in her head.
Yeah, so he had bought
So he took his daughter to go to the shop to go and buy the spearheads to kill her.
That's awful.
That's awful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so on Saturday evening, so 4 days after he murdered Anna, he put Gracie down in her cot at about 9 p.m. He had several drinks to numb his senses, and then he went to the garage to get his spear gun. He came back and he fired it into the left side of her head. He shot her again and then a third time, but Gracie was hanging on to life. He then pulled a spear out of her head and he fired it again, and this time Gracie fell silent.
That's absolutely awful.
That's horrific. That is 20 horrific. Months old.
What a fucking shame. That's...
You okay?
Yeah, that's horrible.
So the morning after killing Gracie, John removed the spears from her head. He covered his face with a towel so that he didn't have to look at what he had done to his own child. So while he was doing that, he covered his face. Like...
What a coward.
Oh. So he wrapped her body in bin bags and tarpaulin and left her at the Mornington Refuse Transfer
Station. What, he just put her on a rubbish tip?
Yeah. So basically that's where the waste goes before being taken to the landfill.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, he basically just took her to the tip.
Yeah, really, she was just a bit of trash.
Yeah, so he also dumped the spear gun, spears and some of Gracie's clothing and toys. A couple of days later, John bought two tarpaulins, duct tape and a chainsaw. He dug up Anna's body and he cut it into three pieces. He then wrapped up her remains and took her and the chainsaw to the refuse transfer station as well. So police began the search of the transfer station and the landfill site in late June 2004. It was cold, it was wet and windy, but there were like tons of police volunteers helping because... Some of them were even putting in extra time because they just wanted to find mm-hmm. Anna and Gracie.
Yeah.
So after several days of intensive searching of thousands of tons of waste, a tarpaulin was found containing some of Anna's remains. And by mid-July, all of her remains had been found.
Mm.
Then searchers found Gracie's body. So at least they could be laid to rest. And they actually had two services. So they had one in Mornington for obviously like Anna's friends. Yeah. Like people from the nursery and the preschool and things yeah. like that for Gracie. And then they had one in New Zealand for their family. So John was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 33 years for the murders of Anna and Gracie. And he wasn't charged for the death of the unborn baby who was a little boy called Francis.
Mm.
He should have been charged. If that baby is a baby.
Yeah,
that, they know that baby is a boy. It's not... Doesn't matter anyway, no matter what size it is, but it's not a fetus, you know, it's a baby.
Exactly.
That baby is a boy. That baby has a name. They'd named that baby. Mm-hmm. So he should have been charged with murder of that baby as well.
And chance of parole after 33 years, should he get a chance of parole at all?
No.
It'd be life forever.
No, absolutely.
After that, that's horrific.
Yeah. So that was your wee bonus and you're giving me a horrible look.
Well, it's not
a nice. No, I know, it was a horrible one.
Yeah, what a shame. But there we go, another true crime case.
Done.
Okay,
so if anybody wants to get in contact with us, our details will be in the show notes.
And if you haven't already, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review.
Thanks for listening.